The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Putting the ECT into exciting, it's Football Weekly. Today, people moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the colour of their jersey. It's Premier League Survival Sunday, as roller coaster becomes most overused word in English language, replacing super injunction and woof. We salute the plucky losers and winners and discuss the eyebrow-raising departures of Carlo Ancelotti and Carlos Tevez too. That's not all. There's other end-of-season business, like the Copa Libertadores, AFC Wimbledon, and why Vladimir Putin does Schalke transfer business. All of that plus posts and our special preview of Saturday's big showdown in London, Team Man U versus Team Messi, in today's Football Week. Well then, hello and welcome to Football Weekly with Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Fernando Duarte.
Hola, James.
And to you too. And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Yes, it's all over there. 90 minutes, five teams, 14 changes, to which two would be joining West Ham in the Championship. But it ended up as Birmingham and Blackpool. Fernando, thoughts?
I was really sad for Blackpool because, you know, part of the season they really seem to be doing this miracle of not overspending or not trying to buy their permanence in the Premiership. They actually try to run a very realistic model, financial model. It's the same to see them going down, especially because they play some entertaining football.
But, you know, maybe that's the thing. You know, we treat relegation as a tragedy. But in Blackpool's case, if you would have said to them before their playoff final with Cardiff last season, you'll go up, you'll get £60 million for being in the Premier League, then what is it, £47 million worth of parachute?
After 48 in parachutes, isn't it?
Yeah. And they haven't overspent. So they're actually set for years now as a result of this one season.
However, they're going to lose Charlie Adam and probably DJ Campbell as well. So it's they're going to have to do a massive rebuilding of the squad. And let's be honest, as much as we all respect the Football League and the Empower Championship, that's a competition where everybody who's there wants to get out. So really, it's not the best place to be, in my humble opinion.
No, sure, you prefer to be in the Premier League. Barry, how much trouble are Birmingham going to be in? Or are they used to this kind of thing?
Well, apparently they're sort of, this could signal financial meltdown for them, and it may herald the departure of Carsten Young, but he looked very stony-faced yesterday when they became apparent they were going to be relegated. But there seems to be very little sympathy for Birmingham. A lot of people are delighted to see the back of them from the Premier League. Their tactics are very negative. Even when they needed to score a goal yesterday to stay up, their tactics continued to be negative because their players didn't realise they needed to score a goal and didn't seem quite
sure. Do you think
sure
they genuinely didn't know?
I think there was a couple of minutes there where they genuinely did not know what was going on.
Extraordinary, because the number of laptops and mobiles and carrier pigeons that were being deployed and
winged monkeys.
Winged
also.
Monkeys, yeah.
But, there's been cases in the past of teams not knowing what they needed to do. You know, Steve Lomas going out to running the ball out to the corner and then as a Man City player, and Niall Quinn sprinting down the touchline, I think he was a sub at the time, to tell him, no, we need to score a goal. So he then, you know, turned around and crossed. I would imagine in the simmering cauldron that is a do-or-die relegation match, it's difficult to keep tabs on what's going on. Now, who do you believe? Your fans telling you one thing, the bench telling you another. And yesterday, I mean, even professional broadcasters were getting tremendously confused,
confused
as the goals went in. Mm. The lack of sympathy for Birmingham is in stark contrast to the sympathy bordering on patronisation of Blackpool, you know. Everyone seems to be sorry to see them go, but the fact of the matter is they weren't good enough. They conceded 78 goals.
They knew the risks. They knew what they were getting into.
They conceded too many goals. Birmingham didn't score enough. Like, Birmingham have averaged, I think, less than a goal a game, just under a goal a game for the last two seasons. So,
Well, there you go then. A heartbreak for Blackpool and Birmingham. Most dramatic game was probably the Wolves-Blackburn game, where they went, 3-0 down and looked in and buried and then fought their way back with a bit of help from goals elsewhere. But at the end, Mick McCarthy looking genuinely joyful.
Yeah, and obviously he was delighted. The they were dead and buried at half-time, clawed their way back into it courtesy of goals from Jamie O'Hara and Stephen Hunt, which, you know, every goal was absolutely vital. If even if Birmingham had drawn with Tottenham, Birmingham would still have gone down because Wolves would have... Their goal difference was identical with Wolves, but Wolves scored more. So, you know, it made for very exciting viewing.
I thought you'd be more excited about that. What got you most excited then on Survival Sunday, Barry?
The fact that before the games kicked off, I predicted on Twitter that Blackpool and Birmingham would go down, and I was right.
Wow, that is exciting.
It doesn't happen very often.
Did you put your money where your mouth is?
No.
Oh, shit.
I wonder if the Premier League will be slightly vindicated in terms of their much maligned four-strength squad rule, because Wolves, of course, picked up a lot of points against teams that they perhaps shouldn't have beaten on paper, where they had a goal and beat them.
All right. Very good point. Very good point. Let's move on then, having congratulated the team staying up and commiserated with those going down, to the other bits of news from this final weekend of the season. Bits of news like Carlo Ancelotti.
The Chelsea job is the best job in the world.
Because you get a fat payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously, I mean, what else? When will Roman Abramovich learn that basically, you know, decapitating managers as if he was like some kind of Jacobin character in revolutionary France is not the solution?
It was a bad time for football management.
Yes, yeah. Bad time, yeah. Especially if you had any connections with the royal family.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, none of this this tinkering has actually brought him the Champions League. So, you know, maybe he should be trying to look a bit more after his money, because it's just getting into this silly job that people are going to be attracted because they know that even if they get fired, they're going to go home with a massive payout.
Mm. How did it pan out? He left the kind of media area, did his interviews, and there was a Chelsea suit waiting for him to say, listen, Carlo. Why didn't they just do that before he'd gone out there and said, oh, we'll have a meeting later in the week?
Well, the official reason that Chelsea gave was because they wanted him to be able to say goodbye to the players on the flight back, because a lot of them were going straight off on the holidays.
Right.
So there wasn't time to have that meeting, and then he wouldn't have been able to say goodbye to the players. Whether you buy that or not, I'm not sure. It's all very ill-befitting a club who wants to be taken seriously to get rid of a manager in that fashion. Having said that, I think there were one or two very good arguments for getting rid of him. Because,
for example?
Well, I think if you think back to his appointment, and his brief was A, to win the Champions League, and B, to get the best out of an aging squad. Now, you could say that he got some way towards that by winning the double, of course, and by getting a lot of the squad last year. But this year he clearly didn't succeed on either front. And his way of management, which is very understanding of players and very...
he's too low, nice a guy, do you think?
Low intensity when it comes to... Also, on training pitch-wise, might have worked better places like AC Milan, where you have lesser games, where the focus was very clearly on the Champions League, so even less games that really counted over the 8 years that he was there.
Yeah, although he only won the title twice in 8 years.
No, he did very well.
There were plenty of years he didn't win the European Cup. Though.
Yeah, and he also won only one title.
One Scudetto
in 8 years. And I just think he might not have been the right person for the job for next year. And I can understand Chelsea's point to a certain extent.
Who will get the job next year then?
Well, I think we all know who they want. They're going to go again to try and tempt Gus to take the job. He's got a tricky away fixture in Belgium on Saturday, I think, the 3rd of June, by which time Turkey might effectively be out of the running for that second spot in Germany's group. Which might make it easier for Chelsea to persuade him. Having said that, I think there's still a general consensus within the game and even on the Chelsea board that Hiddink himself doesn't want to be a real hands-on manager, but wants to have a more slightly more removed
kind of director of football role
upstairs kind of job,
which is also vacant, isn't it? The director of football role at Chelsea.
Yeah. So I think the best that we've got at the moment is a combination in terms of realistic candidacy is a combination of Hiddink and Van Basten.
Is Avram Grant really going back?
No.
No. Okay.
Now, I was going to say about, pick up on, you know, on what Rafa said about the way of how this management style would work better at AC Milan. Let's remember that also at AC Milan, the players had a lot of responsibility. They had a much more commanding presence. I mean, you could delegate stuff to guys like Ambrosini, Maldini, etc. I don't see the same kind of like player. How can I say that player will within the Chelsea squad? Ancelotti had some help from the guys at Milan.
Surely one of the problems in the past that Chelsea has been cited as being overly strong, overly commanding players. Supposedly John Terry had a hand in Mourinho's departure. We'll ask Sid, indeed, later on, whether there's any reaction in Spain to the stories that Mourinho, indeed, might be making a return to Stamford Bridge. It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? But
There's one thing which we have to say, and I have to say in Ancelotti's defence, when it comes to the squad and its demographics.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be very sympathetic towards Carlo Ancelotti. Yes. I would say yesterday was a good day for him because he's got all this money. He no longer has to work for Roman Abramovich, and I don't think his reputation has taken any much of a dent, and he'll probably get a new job. Will he go to Roma, do you think?
I'm not yet sure, Barry. Totti said that he would certainly like him, which must be news for his current manager, Vincenzo Montella, his teammate. But nice to have the Totti seal of approval. I mean, stranger things have happened, and Carlo certainly always expressed an interest in going back to Roma.
I thought he was kind of undermined at every turn at Chelsea as well. They sacked Ray Wilkins, gave him a foisted a number two on him that he had no interest in working with, by the sound of things. And then
the arrival of Fernando Torres also was massively...
They wouldn't let him sign players he needed.
A lot of people suggest that Ancelotti himself was trying to sign Fernando Torres last summer. And all right, he would have arrived and had time to prepare and integrate into the team. But it's not as if those stories are to be believed, that Torres was some imposition. Had he scored goals, we might have been saying, what a lucky man Ancelotti is to have such a generous owner. Anyway, there you go. You mentioned Sunderland, Barry.
You're who not thanking me today, are you?
What?
You undermine me on everything I say.
Yeah.
A bitch.
There's more where that came from. Want some more, Johnny Foreigner? Come here. Singing on our pods.
Never did that again.
Now, that's true, isn't it? It's true. Sorry, Barry, you mentioned Sunderland. And I was just going to say, well, I was just going to quote Varmint Rapscallion. It says, oh, the much maligned Sunderland finish above the much heralded Bolton Wanderers. Interesting, no?
Yeah.
Not that interesting.
I wouldn't.
How about this one? Eric Hopp says, is it a coincidence that Fulham got 12 yellows and one red in their last three games? Is it, Barry? Is it?
I doubt it. Oh. But Mark Hughes says that he seems keen to play in the Europa League, and it looks almost certainly like they will get the fair play spot.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
despite Jada's red card.
Well, what happens is it's not based entirely on red and yellow cards. It's also based on, you know, the attitude of your officials and players, or backroom team and players towards officials.
This is the fair play award.
The manner in which you go about your business on the field and all that. So it involves delegates writing reports and submitting them to UEFA, so we won't know till Thursday,
yeah. Decision whether on Europa League
it's
fair play.
Fulham
spot.
Or Blackpool that will get it.
Yeah, which would be really exciting because in Europa League you would have Birmingham, who are in the Championship, and Blackpool, who are in the Championship, and Stoke, who of course are not. But
it'll do wonders for the UEFA coefficient.
Yeah, and for the Europa League.
It would also mean the team, whatever team gets the spot, would have to play their first game before the end of June.
6 weeks before the season begins.
Yeah, now it could be argued that, well, you're going to have to do your pre-season, you might as well do it by playing competitive football, but I'd imagine Fulham, more so than Blackpool, probably have a, you know, maybe a lucrative summer tour planned or something that would have to be interrupted.
Hmm. Right.
So they can play.
But if you worry about how a team struggling at the bottom of the Premiership is going to cope with the rigours of a European campaign, what would it do to Birmingham and Blackpool?
Well, they'd have to play 46 games in the Championship for a start. But I'd imagine neither of them would get too far in the Europa League. So
Right. Okay.
But it looks like it will almost certainly be Fulham that get the spot, despite their heroic attempts to avoid it by getting all those yellow cards and Zoltan Gira's heroic sending off yesterday.
Well, I'll finish off then with another of the big questions. Carlos Tevez, will he get a ride on a topless model on Monday? Like so many of his Manchester City teammates, you know, celebrating the FA Cup, they did that open top bus thing.
Yes, I know exactly what you meant.
Good.
Well, there's talk that he's going to forgo the celebrations.
Well, he booked a flight on
because
Monday
he
morning.
Wants to go to Buenos Aires. Yeah. The usual thing, he wants to be closer to his
he might have
more
a
money.
Model there.
He might, and fair play to him if he does. Good
All
luck
right.
to him. I mean, obviously, the big question, will he stay, will he go? And we probably won't find out for months, and it's going to be really
But you're
really
enthusiastic
dull.
To talk about it anyway. Yeah. That's good. All right.
But I just don't know, so nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
I think I did the rumour mill this
I
morning.
I think everyone's pretty clear he's leaving, aren't they? Mancini keeps saying he's staying,
wants to.
But he says, I'm leaving. So
yeah, but, you know, he said that in the winter, and nobody called, and then he suddenly stayed, and I'm not sure who's calling this time.
I think Inter are calling. Listeners,
are they really calling?
Yeah, I think they are.
But well, can they,
Juventus
will they top his wages?
I think they can offer interesting enough wages to him. Yeah, Inter a club with a massive...
But it seems to be entirely... I don't buy this nonsense about him wanting to be closer to his family. I mean...
Yeah, he's not going to play in the Argentine League. He's not going to resign for
no, but
whoever
there,
played
there,
for.
There is an area in between playing in Manchester and playing in Argentina. And even though it may involve his children leaving Argentina, there are environments in which they, and more particularly their mother, what, might feel
the,
happier about
Azores
leaving.
Or?
Sorry. So, yeah.
They
exactly.
could go and live in Moneygall, which is where President Obama is visiting
right.
in Ireland.
Right. A special area which has given birth to some very special people.
Yes.
Yeah, Barry Glendening.
No, I'm not from Moneygall.
Oh, and you? Where are you from? Offaly.
From Burr, which is... Moneygall is in County Offaly and Burr is in County Offaly.
All right, then.
But Moneygall... Let's just say President Obama is in for a bit of a shock when he sees where his great-great-great...
What kind of vision awaits him there?
Webbed fingers.
Right.
Six toes and brothers married to sisters, things
right.
like that.
All right, then. Sounds like we need a quick musical sting and then on to part two. Part two. Europe next season. Interesting. Who's getting in the cup from Germany then, Raphael?
In the cup?
Yeah,
are
like
you
Europa
referring
League
to the
and Champions,
Champions
League?
Champions League.
Yeah.
It's Dortmund, the winners, of course.
Yes.
Leverkusen runners-up and Bayern are in the playoffs, where they cannot meet Arsenal because they're both seeded.
Ooh.
So it was good news for all of Europe when City came third, because that meant that Arsenal were in... Well, when I say all of Europe, I mean the more established bigger leagues, because none of their teams can play Arsenal.
Right.
Because they'll be seeded.
Okay. How are Borussia going to do? Frank Stein, for example, saying, what are the chances of them keeping the core of their team together? Nuri Sahin's already gone dying to Madrid. And rumours circulating about Mario Götze.
Yeah, Götze to Arsenal is the rumour, but there is Ooh. Really nothing in it, because oh. Dortmund have decided that they're going to spend most of that Champions League money on keeping the squad together rather than buying new players, bringing new players in. They're going to up everybody's wages, get a firm commitment from them to stay. And also the sort of the makeup of the squad and the dressing room really is such that after this incredible adventure and winning the title and in such fantastic fashion and doing something that nobody thought was possible, that it'd be a shame now to leave at this stage. All these young players, Götze just being one of them, they really want to see if they can take it one step further next season in the first ever Champions League season for them and for the quite brilliant manager, of course, Jurgen Klopp, who will want to prove himself. So there won't be a breakup of this team. Sahin, I think, was a special case because he had a release clause and he was very early contacted by Real Madrid and felt that he was able to go. But some of the even younger players, he's 22, but some of them are a lot younger, they'd be mad, frankly, to move at this stage. Much better off playing regularly at Dortmund.
All right. Barry.
It's a very different situation from 97, isn't it? I mean, the squad, that squad of 97 was actually basically the German national team in a certain way. I mean,
The 97 team were at the end of a cycle. They had won two titles And then the third year they won. They won the Champions League with guys like Kohler and Sammer and
Müller.
And Müller and guys really, and Riedler, towards the end of their career. Of course, there was this young Lars Ricken, who scored a fantastic goal in the final.
Not as fantastic as Ali Del Piero's.
Yeah, but it was
if pretty, only he'd started that
it was
game,
a pretty
had different history.
It was a pretty good
wasn't
goal.
Wasn't there a Scotsman in that team as well?
There was a Scotsman in the team who will be in the,
Norwich.
In the Premier League next season. Mm. Yeah, now you can't really compare, basically.
But can they do anything special in the Champions League, you think?
To do something special, I think, would be difficult. But then, you know, Schalke, being a very non-special side, got to the semi-finals. So Dortmund are at least twice, if not
depends if
three times
Inter,
as good. Yeah. That might help.
Okay, all right. Inter will be in the Champions League, along with Milan and Napoli, who bizarrely are now saying they're going to not fire their manager, but replace him and let him sit around for 2 years. Because he was humming and hawing about whether he might go somewhere else. Those jobs are now gone. So then he said at the weekend, oh, no, I'm ready to launch a new campaign with Napoli. And Napoli said, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, take a seat on the sidelines, mate. You ain't going nowhere.
What about Leonardo?
What about him?
Surely he can't stay.
Of course he's going to stay. They're very happy with him.
Why?
Because if you look at his record since taking over from Benitez, compared to the number of points that Milan won in the same time, his Inter actually did better. Benitez did the first part of the season with Inter. Since that change, Inter outperformed the team that won the title. Therefore, I mean, this is just statistics, but that is one of the justifications for Inter in saying that that Leonardo, after coming in midway through a season, it's a difficult thing to do, blah, blah, blah. He will be in charge of a new look into next season.
If he wasn't a pretty face, if he wasn't a nice guy, he would never get these jobs. That's why I'm so annoyed with Leonardo. I mean, he's a lovely bloke.
Mm-hmm.
But if he wasn't that nice guy who speaks languages...
Even nicer than Ancelotti, some people suggest.
Yeah, he is. He's a very nice fuck. We're from the same city in Brazil.
Niterói.
Exactly. Yeah. But seriously.
It's a surf town.
Honestly, how is it really possible that tactically... such an inept manager can hold on to his job.
In Serie A, and everybody lauds Ian Holloway for his exciting attack.
But Ian Holloway was lauded, as Barry said, in a patronising way because he was doing things with little Blackpool that were very nice to look at,
mm-hmm.
in the safe knowledge that they're not going to hurt anyone and go down at the end of the season. Leonardo's trying to win titles at one of Europe's biggest and richest clubs and can't coach a team to save his life, so, you know.
Well, he says that were it not for four cursed days,
yeah.
that we wouldn't be talking about his season in such a negative fashion. And it is true to say, as I mentioned from the point of view of the league, that his record hasn't been disastrous. But anyway.
You just won't hear a bad word said about anything or anyone in any way connected with Serie A, will you?
Is that
you
a
won't
bad
have
thing,
it.
Barry?
Pardon?
Is that a bad thing?
Well, it's admirable, but...
No, there are lots of bad things to say about Syria. I have to say that Inter continuing with Leonardo isn't by any means the worst of them. But anyway, Udinese are going to be in the Champions League playoffs. That's exciting, isn't it? After their 0-0 draw on the final day with Milan, which caught everyone by surprise. I hope you had something on that, Barry. And, just want to say, well done to Francesco Gandolfo. I'm really excited to know more about this young man. He's come out of nowhere. Bari, who had been down for weeks, on the final day of the season, they gave the first start to an 18-year-old called Francesco Gandolfo, and he got a hat-trick. Okay, interesting observation about the Charity Shields, because the Italians, it could be Milan against Inter, as long as Palermo don't go and win the Coppa Italia. In England, the Community Shield is Man U against Man City, and Spain Super Cup is Barcelona against Real. Who's it going to be in Germany?
Well, funny you should ask that, because Schalke played Duisburg in the cup final on Saturday.
Right.
And it was Schalke being fairly rich from the top division against lowly, plucky underdogs Duisburg from the second division. And just guess what happened, the magic of the cup? 5-0 to Schalke.
Ah.
They had no chance. Duisburg, it was all over.
It was all over
after 20 minutes. They were 3-0 down.
All right. I thought you didn't get big scorelines in Germany.
Well, you do when it's first against second division.
All right, okay. But there was... sorry, Barry.
I just wanted to ask Rafa, is Borussia Mönchengladbach stay up or is their playoff taking place yet?
The first leg has taken place. The second leg is on Tuesday. Right. They got 1-0 lead from their home game against Bochum. Very good game. It was too. We should mention quickly for all those who like to follow the fortunes of Manuel Neuer that his move is a little bit in doubt again because Schalke have renewed their sponsorship deal with friendly Russian energy company Gazprom at very inflated rates. And Vladimir Putin himself has apparently expressed an interest in keeping Manuel Neuer. And
hasn't he got other things to worry?
Well, you would think so, but you know, as we've seen from recent FIFA ceremonies, they have ways to persuade people. So you know, you never know. Schalke now have said there'll be an extraordinary board meeting where they're going to decide because the price has been agreed,
right?
But they still have to ratify the deal at board level. And to make matters just a little bit more interesting, at the celebratory convoy, open car parade, etc. Manuel Neuer was slapped in the face by a fan.
Really?
Yeah.
A fan of who?
A fan of Schalke.
Really?
Who was very unforgiving.
That's not a tradition or anything in the UK.
No.
Okay. Tell me, geopolitical note, why would Putin particularly want Schalke to keep their goalkeeper? Is he a Schalke fan? Bit like, you know, John
Gazprom are half owned by the Russian government.
Right, okay, but yeah, okay. Well, in France, even worse, Lille won the cup and won the league, so they'll have to play themselves. While we're on the subject of France, McQuiff says that after giggling over the league roundup a couple of weeks back, last week, in fact, the pod will be ecstatic to learn of the promotion to France's top division of Barry Evian. You can see it now, says McQuiff. Nothing to lose for René as he spills Evian all over Nice's Nancy's. Yeah, and then it gets into a very predictable. But Ingmar Bergkamp says, I'm sure there'll be something about Evian being naive at the back. That's really clever. Evian is naive backwards. Do everybody know it, that? Yeah. Surely the obvious one is Evian, they'll bottle it. No? All right.
Put
Bingo the
it,
dog points out that Dijon are also promoted.
Do you think they'll cut the mustard?
That was very much the question he was asking as well, Barry.
Right.
Yeah. there you go. Super.
It's been a long season, hasn't it, Jimbo?
Certainly has. A couple of other posts before we finish off what's been a stellar part two. Wango Kid says, if Fernando Duarte is going to be on the pod, would it be possible to ask him about Leandro Damião? What kind of a player is he? What's he like? How good is he? And is he going to Spurs? Fernando.
The Spurs part, I don't know, because Spurs always seems to be signing everybody, or they're almost signing everybody all the time.
Right.
Leandro Damião is a fantastic case because two, 3 seasons ago, this player was actually playing the Sunday leagues. He wasn't a professional footballer.
What did he do for a living?
I don't know. He used to get like pocket money from a Sunday league team. We called the Vazia, so he would get like a couple of hundred reais a month, you know, enough to get himself going. And then... he was discovered, plays for Internacional. I mean, they are the current South American champions, and he's been capped by Brazil. He played against Scotland. He actually started the match. If he's good enough to keep on there, well, we don't know. But with this, you know, it's fairy tale story. It might be around there. The thing is, as usual, Brazil in the need of forwards. We got like Luis Fabiano injured for ages. We don't have a classic number nine. This guy seems to be one of those typical number nines. If he's gonna go the distance, a totally different story. But then again, if you think that 2 years ago he was basically in a Sunday league team,
right? Interesting. Ilano is at Santos, isn't he?
He is, and Santos basically are the only Brazilian team left in the Libertadores Cup. There's been this fantastic, you know, reverse of fortunes. In the round of 16, there were 5 Brazilian teams, and people said, yeah, Brazil are finally reverting the Argentine domination of the Libertadores because historically Brazilian teams bottled the Libertadores fight, especially in the 60s and the 70s when you didn't have the television everywhere and you could get away with a lot of things, including coming to the pitch with like a very, very sharp rings to draw blood from the players. You know, it was total war. But I loved the tournament when it was like that because it was a proper criminal tournament. But anyway, Santos are in the semifinals. They play Cerro Porteño of Paraguay, and that's a chance they can try to win this title for the first time since the days of Pelé, 62 and 63. You know, so it's interesting. The other semifinal is Peñarol, another of the early Libertadores giants, and Vélez Sarsfield. So it's going to be a very interesting tournament. Classic semi-final pairing. But Alano is doing...
Who's playing Ceará? Ceará from up northeast?
Cerro. Oh, Cerro is a team from Paraguay.
Oh, from Paraguay.
Yeah, Paraguay. Never won the Libertadores. Olimpia is the only Paraguayan side to have won it. So,
wow.
Yeah, because wow. Argentina has got like 22 titles, Brazil 14, Uruguay 8. And the last time Uruguay, Peñarol won it was in 87. And for the first time in 24 years, they actually get that far in the Libertadores, which now is a very different tournament. You got a sponsorship of that, you know, Japanese car maker with the braking problems, etc.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and prize money has increased. You can the champion will make $5 million. Nothing compared to the Champions League, but it's a massive amount of money for South American standards, Jimbo.
Is the fact that somebody like Elano is playing for a Brazilian club, is that reflective of a new trend or of a growth of the domestic power of these Brazilian clubs, or is it just an exception?
No, it's not accepted. There's been a movement. Brazil now is one of the biggest importers of players in the world. It's really funny. They've been getting guys from Latin America at record levels, and some big names are coming back, not necessarily to have a swan song thing. Elano still have at least like another 3 or 4 seasons for him. And the economy is better. The clubs are more organized, but not all clubs. You see Fluminense, the current national champions, they've been in disarray for months. They have a very strong sponsor who actually picks up the managers. So the organized clubs are actually able to repatriate things. Ronaldinho in Flamengo is another example of how this trend is also very supported by this fashionable thing. It's really like easy to repatriate guys. But Ronaldinho didn't have a place to go. I would say that Elano would have a place in Europe. He could still be playing at top level, while Ronaldinho, perhaps his best days are gone.
All right, then. We failed to spot that Elano was at Santos when we were talking about him in Thursday's pod.
He scored a cracker in the semi-final. Fantastic free kick.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. I mean, one of the reasons we lost the World Cup is because he wasn't playing. I mean, there was a murder attempt in a game against the Ivory Coast when that one of the fellas there decided to, you know, try to break his leg in a million pieces. And we actually miss him loads in that right side of midfield. And he's back to the national team.
Fair enough. Excellent. Okay, Pato out, though, we think.
Pato might be out of the Copa America because he had a dislocated shoulder. The Copa America is our version of the European Championships. It's going to be playing in Argentina from the 1st of July, if I'm not wrong. And Pato apparently out. It's a difficult tournament because it doesn't mean a lot of things. Brazil has won like almost all of them in the last few years, but it's the only official competition Brazil will have until the Confederations Cup in 2013.
But you usually beat Argentina either in the final or somewhere along the way. So
yes.
And that always means something, doesn't it?
It means, but it's not meaningful because if you don't win the World Cup, well, Dunga won the Copa America.
Right.
With fantastic display against Argentina, 3-0, etc. And people still lambasted him when he lost the World Cup. So it's funny because we don't have another official competition until 2013. If Menezes loses a Copa America, the whole patience with his work might switch. This whole thing we were criticizing about Abramovich is rife in Brazil. Sacking the manager is ridiculously common.
Oh, I should mention, sorry, Elano at Santos, a lot of people posting other things we've got to say were that other players who've managed to play for Inter, Juventus and Milan included Ibrahimovic. Whoops. And also Edgar Davids. Yeah. That's it for part two. Stand by for part three. Part three. Other bits, it says here. Arsenal ladies beat Bristol Academy 2-0. Stop. Stop it. 2-0. To win the women's FA Cup final.
Nice to see Arsenal win something.
Yes. Swindon have lost a sponsor after Paulo Di Canio's appointment.
Yeah, what do you make of that?
Well,
his appointment, I mean, not the
It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Sponsor.
Can it end happily? I don't think so. I can't think of... What Swindon need is a lot of money, not a new manager.
And, particularly not a Nazi.
Well,
fascist.
Yeah, there is that. And there is also the fact that what experience does he have?
None.
Well, there you go. Two worrying aspects. But you might say that it's nice to see somebody taking a stand on this kind of thing. No, and it was certainly widely reported that in Italy. In England, you don't mess around with fascism and Mussolini, said the article in the Gazzetta dello Sport. And I think that's something we can regard as positive.
At least Swindon's players will probably turn up on time for training.
They'll train on time. Very fantastic. Happy Goss says, AFC Wimbledon in the Football League, this is the future.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I've kind
sad
of...
Sad for Luton, though.
Yeah, I felt it's one of those games I'd have been quite happy for either team to win because Luton were very hard done by, I think, you know, and they're stuck in the conference for another year. They'll probably get out next season. But it's a marvellous story for AFC Wimbledon. I think it's, what, 9 years after they were created, and everyone knows how they came about. And now they're a Football League side, and fair play to them. The goalkeeper who saved the penalties in the shootout, he's a boyhood Wimbledon fan, grew up supporting the team. And, yeah, good luck to them.
Lovely, lovely. Cinemagic, on a completely unrelated note, but an interesting one all the same. We keep having discussions about why there's such a big difference in home advantage or home form and away form, and a lot of people have talked about the refereeing and how they're affected and intimidated by big crowds. Greg Ruffley had some interesting notions about where the kettle is. And Cinemagic says, I've been thinking for a while about this, and he was using the example of Thierry Henry and his frustration in the first season after the move from Highbury to the Emirates for Arsenal. And he, apparently Thierry Henry in an interview, made an interesting point about this. He said in the old stadium, he had visual clues all around the ground as to where he was, perhaps building posts, steps, flags, that kind of thing, which he used to quickly establish his position relative to goal, perhaps even subconsciously. This meant passes were played more accurately and shots, if aimed at a certain point with a certain curl, would always go bottom corner, for example. Obviously, home fans' comfortable dressing rooms and familiar build-up help as well, but it could be another factor in home advantage. I think it's a really interesting point.
Jens Lehmann made a similar point, but he actually said the opposite. He said Highbury was always more difficult to play from because every stand was a different height and reflected the light differently, etc., whereas the Emirates had sort of one uniform outlook, and it was much easier for him to adjust. It didn't make such a difference what side of the pitch you were playing.
Right, okay.
But the visual clues, it is something that players talk about. I mean, reference points, especially in passing things. I mean, I've heard some Brazilian players talking about this as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't there wasn't there a study that home teams produce more testosterone before games? This is not a joke. I think there was a study that somebody went in and measured the testosterone levels and found that amongst the home side, they were producing more.
I think you're thinking of the U.S. Postal Cycling Team. Recent renovation.
Very topical.
I have noticed...
Ian Rush, I think.
Organic testosterone.
some football pitches, like, they have lines on them.
Yeah, with a big arrow saying, this way, Fernando.
Or, you know, you see a white spot on the pitch, and that sort of tells you you're exactly 12 yards from goal and straight out. It's convenient. Reference points.
Right. You mentioned the Emirates, and we will be groping our way around those unfamiliar surroundings on Saturday evening.
You make it sound very sordid.
Well, here's hoping. Myself, Barry, and a luxury VIP team of top expert panellists will be there, along with a cast of hundreds, as we finish off the Football Weekly season with a special homage to the Champions League final, with a bit of quiz possibly thrown in, or not. We're not quite sure about that.
It sounds like something like us and Wenger dreamt up. Never mind Wembley, we're at the Emirates, hooray!
Yep, exactly. Well, anyway, that'll be available from Sunday morning, I'm guessing, or maybe late Saturday night onwards. Look forward to it, that's my tip, because it's going to be a cracker. Especially because everybody's keeping their powder very much dry today. All the best material earmarked for Saturday night. However, meanwhile, across town, another similarly exciting occasion taking place. It is it Barcelona-Man United or Man United-Barcelona? Because after that home team advantage thing, I wonder. Nobody knows.
I think it's not Barcelona-Man United.
Is it? All right. I bet Sid knows. Should we dial up Sid Lowe and ask him that?
Hello, James. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Sid! Who's at home in the Champions League final? It's a really boring question, actually. I can't believe we're even wasting the listeners' time with this. So let's not.
It's Barcelona, Man United.
Okay, let's dial up Sid. Sid Lowe, there you are. There you are, Sid. Deny it if you will, but you're there. He's not. Has he gone? We've lost him.
And you know what? We're asking the same question.
Hello.
Hey, there he is. Good. Listen, Sid. How are you? Oh, he's gone again. Sid?
Hello.
Yay! He's back again. All right, then.
I feel flattered that every time I say hello, you'll cheer.
Well,
don't move.
The thing is that nobody can leave until we record this bit with you.
I'm desperate to get out of here. I'm going into another channel, so I really hope this doesn't screw you up.
Are you on a train?
I am on a train, yes.
All right, then. Is it on time?
Well, the train into Barcelona was on time. This one looks like it's on time as well. It's just going to cross Barcelona from one side to the other.
All right. And where are you going to, Sid?
So I'm heading up to the Camp Nou because today Leo Messi and Pep Guardiola will be talking to us about the Champions League final in which Barcelona are either the home or the away team. I don't know. And hopefully the chance to talk to some of the other players as well.
All right, fantastic. What are you going to ask them, Sid?
Well, it's a good question. There's a whole load of things that I'm interested in, but it might not be a case of what I want to ask them, some of what I can ask them, because this is
all kind of... My thoughts exactly. All right, then. Well, anyway, while Sid's in a tunnel, yeah, it is an issue. It is.
If Sid's in Barcelona, the Primavera Music Festival is on this week.
Anyone
Barcelona.
Playing?
Lots of people are playing.
Who's playing, Barry?
Cake.
I don't. The only band I know for certain that's playing is Grinderman, but there's some friends of mine who have gone to this festival.
And did they go to see Grinderman?
Well, I just remember one of them saying he was specifically looking forward to seeing Grinderman.
Oh, okay.
You do know who's a front man for Grinderman, right?
I'm not.
It's Nick Cave.
Ah.
Sorry,
hello. Hey! Sid, let's not waste time. All right, Sid, you're on a train. We got that far. And you might have another tunnel.
I'm rolling into France, so I think this is the last. There shouldn't be another tunnel before the platform, so hopefully we're A-OK.
Fantastic news. You're on your way to talk to top coaching talent Pep Guardiola and good footballer Leo Messi. Or Leo Messi, as I should call him, actually. Terrific. I've got lots of questions for you. One, ash cloud over European airspace, is that a concern?
Yeah, it is a concern. Of course it is. The provision at the moment is that there's a risk of the British airspace being closed on Thursday, which, of course, coincides rather unhandily with Barcelona's travel plans. So yeah, it is something that genuinely worries. And, of course, this is given extra significance by the fact that it's not the first time it's happened to Barcelona.
No.
Now, we will never, ever know. But there is a belief in Catalonia, at least, that maybe if it hadn't been for the ash cloud, they'd be on course for a third successive Champions League final, not the second in 3 years.
All right. OK, Ronaldo scored a record number of goals this season with two more at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely extraordinary. We're all wondering whether or not he'd get the goal, and the doubt lasted, I think it was 3.5 minutes when he scored. He then got the 40th or the 41st, depending on who you believe, the 40th if you believe me, which is probably not a good idea, later in the game, and the fans gave him a great reception after that. But actually, it was quite quiet after the first one, but he's now got 40 goals this season, which is not just the top scorer this season, but the top scorer ever, overtaking Sara and Hugo Sanchez, were both on 38. It's just an absolutely phenomenal record. There are, of course, one or two kind of bouts around it because of the fact that Real Madrid have scored so many goals at the time when the league title had escaped them. And so one or two people, including even Alfredo Di Stefano this morning in Marca, sort of not questioning the validity of it because it's still an extraordinary achievement, but kind of questioning whether this is quite so big as it looks. Because Real Madrid have scored 29 goals in their last six games.
Wow. He's a bitter old man, though, isn't he, Alfredo Di Stefano? Did he get a mention?
He's certainly pretty grumpy, yeah, that's yeah. true.
Did he got a mention then in Marca? I wondered if they'd find time for that.
This is the thing that made me laugh, was so you've got the cover of Marca and then a couple of pages on, I can't remember what now, and then there was five pages on Cristiano Ronaldo's record, including a little artistic impression or like a little kind of diagram drawing of every single goal he scored this season. So five pages, and then on the sixth page, turn a page over, Alfredo Di Stefano, opening line of his piece, I wonder if everyone's not going a bit over the top about Cristiano Ronaldo.
Talking about going over the top, can you please kill off the Mourinho back to Chelsea story right here, right now, so we don't have to put up with it now for the next 2 months?
Exactly. Don't worry, it's not going to happen. Let's not go around the houses with it.
Really?
He had the opportunity. There were some tentative conversations with Chelsea some time ago, but Mourinho is determined to stay, determined to continue. Real Madrid are making a big thing about how he's going to be their coach for many, many years. Now, I personally don't think he will be there for very many, many years, in truth, but he's certainly not going to walk away now, and they don't want him to either.
All right, then. What about La Coruña, then, Sid?
Yeah, I was going to say it's really sad. I suppose in a way it's not, because we talk about things being unjust in football, but their relegation is entirely justified. Deportivo La Coruña have been a pretty desperately bad team to watch over the last few years. They don't score anything like enough goals. This year they scored 9 goals fewer than Cristiano Ronaldo this year alone. In 21 of the 38 games, they didn't score at all. And they're down, so it's not sad. They deserve it. But it is sad when you look back at what they've achieved over the last 20 years. 20 years in Spain's top division. Only 4 teams have got a better record than that. We're talking about a team that got to a Champions League semi-final, that won the league despite having won almost... desperately unluckily taken off them in the last minute. They, of course, won the Copa del Rey twice, including on Real Madrid's birthday in Real Madrid's stadium. So it's a real shame to see them go. They were great to watch once upon a time, but they're not anymore.
Well, yeah, it wasn't that long ago either, was it? I remember the extraordinary 2004. So are they almost like a warning? Because they were the team that made it more than a two-team league. Mm. Is what happened to them the result of overextending themselves trying to compete with the two big clubs?
Yes. Yeah, essentially the backdrop to all of this, I mean, obviously there are a series of other factors as well, but the backdrop to this primarily is this is a team that overachieved in terms of the size of the city. I think I'm right in saying that La Coruña's got 250,000 people that got further than anyone ever expected to, and spent quite a lot, not a huge amount, but quite a lot of money in the process. Then, of course, the money dried up and there were question marks about where the money's going to come from. In fact, just as importantly, there were question marks about where the money had come from originally. And then once that started to dry up, then bit by bit, the team slipped away. You look at the kind of players they've bought over the last few years, very, very few of them have succeeded. Very few of them have cost very much money as well. They haven't had a goal scorer get beyond 10 goals in the last 5 seasons, and that pretty much sums it up.
Wow. Wow. All right, Sid. Well, listen, final thing, Saturday at Wembley, Barcelona against Real Madrid. No, Barcelona against
Real Madrid.
Yeah. I'm so used to that. Yeah, habit. Barcelona against Manchester United. 2-0 last time, Sid. What's your thoughts on this clash?
I know it's a massive cop-out to say I don't know, but I don't know. And I wonder what will happen with Barcelona over the fact... Sorry, someone's just walked past Barcelona and said hello. I wonder what will happen with Barcelona
Sorry? Like a random passerby or...?
Relatively random, yeah. Although I do recognise him, so I'm trying to work out where he's from.
Anyway,
someone just walked past in a Sporting Gijón shirt and said hello, and I think I recognise him, but I can't think where from. But anyway, there you go.
Right. Okay.
Anyway,
do you get stopped in the street in Spain?
I get stopped in the street? Well, yeah, when the traffic lights are red and that. Yeah.
Right. Modest answer. Okay. Anyway, back to your story, Sid.
So, Barcelona haven't played for a couple of weeks because they wrapped up the league title in advance. Now, in theory, that's good for them because, of course, they've been able to get everybody fit and train and prepare specifically for this game. But I just wonder if that actually may take a little bit of edge from them, the fact that they haven't played enough games. I wonder if the kind of two-week preparation is actually a bit of a red herring in terms of saying, oh, this is great for them. I honestly don't know what will happen. I've got a feeling that kind of the sense of momentum might mean that Manchester United are the favourites, but of course there's very, very little in it.
Sid, on that rare moment of harmony and concord, also, I think you're being asked for your ticket.
Someone's shouting the Spanish for bollocks at me.
Oh, all right. You're being recognised all over the place.
although it wouldn't be the first time that someone randomly shouted bollocks at me.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. A subject for another podcast.
Normally in the car.
Right. Oh, okay.
When I first came here, James, I had an English car with a steering wheel on the other side. It was a source of endless entertainment.
Right. Okay, cool. Sid, many thanks. That as well is a story for another pod. Another pod in another season, perhaps, because that's it for Football Weekly. For this campaign, extraordinary to think that it's over. We do have Saturday's special live finale. So it would be good to speak to you then, Sid. Good luck in Barcelona today. And many thanks for everything during the season.
It's been a pleasure, James. I'll speak to you soon.
It's been our pleasure, Sid. There you go, then. That's it. And Fernando, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that in homage to Bob Dylan's 7th birthday, I just think of Carlo Ancelotti when he looks at Roman Abramovich and says, "You've got a lot of nerve to say you are my friend."
Yeah. Okay, that's the worst Bob Dylan impression. He's a really easy person to impersonate.
Now you've got a lot of nerve.
You've got a lot of nerve
to say
you are my friend.
So that's Roy Keane's party piece, you know.
Is it?
That song, yeah.
Everyone
you've
can do
got that. A lot of nerve to say
take
that you're
not
my
everyone.
Friend.
Magnificent. And Raph the Honigstein for your song?
Oh, I don't have a song.
Oh, that's why they love you. Marvellous. Thanks, producer Ben. Thank you, listeners. It's been an amazing season. And we will be back on Saturday, so do join us for that. For now, from all of us here. Oh, also, there's a paper review on Friday. For now, from all of us here, it is bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.